Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
All metal show in February, like, it doesn't get any more romantic than that, right? I didn't know what to say, I don't know.
I'm JP, and this is another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground. Thanks for joining us. We're the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the United States. We distribute free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture, and we feature popular columns by Mike Brown and Esther Moronio, as well as the well-known Ask a Cop Q&A. In this episode, we're going to be doing a slam dance recap with two of our writers that attended the festival recently. We'll be going into the archives and learning about the Writers Project, a really cool nonprofit organization. And we'll be speaking with Yelp community manager Jeffrey Stedman about all the local chocolates you need for Valentine's Day. Every year we like to do different film festival coverage. We've covered Slam Dance and Sundance extensively almost since the beginning of Slam Dance. We've been a part of that festival. It's been going on for 18 years now, and fortunately I'm joined by two of our writers that were able to go to the festival this year, Cody Kirkland and Johnny Logan. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is your first time for both of you guys. How was it?
I had a really good time. I saw some really good films, met some of the people that I talked to for a feature article I wrote on Getting Up, saw that film, and it was really good.
And your experience, Johnny?
Yeah, I got a lot of free beer, and I suppose there were movies, and I interviewed some people along the way, but yeah.
And let's talk about your top three now. Just really briefly, I guess starting with you, Cody, we can run down this list here.
I'd say Getting Up was my favorite documentary feature. It follows the story of Tempt, a LA graffiti artist, and he became paralyzed, and a bunch of people got together and helped him figure out how to write again. That one was awesome. Bindle Stiff's really funny narrative feature, a comedy of three high school virgins that just want to go out and, as they said, fuck shit up. And then Heavy Girls, it was a funny, really low budget feature. It's like a gay romance between these two guys, and it was hilarious. Lots of nudity and lots of heart.
And all three of those won Slam Dance Awards. That's crazy.
I don't think I've ever heard heart and nudity combined together to make an awesome combination. It's first for everything.
What I said about Heavy Girls is it had more nudity than Borat, more nude fight scenes than Borat, but it was really good, kind of touching film.
And funny at the same time.
Yeah,
it's hard to do.
Way funny.
Tell us about the filmmakers and their vein.
There's a van.
Yes,
That's the awesome beginning to any story.
With the Heavy Girls posters all over it, just driving around Park City being crazy.
Were they filming that too, I hope?
Probably.
Yeah.
For web release?
They were carrying a camera around pretty much filming their entire experience.
Did you go into the van as well, Johnny Logan?
I did not. I talked to him once or twice here and there because they're very, very friendly and pretty awesome people. Their film actually won 2 awards, so.
What awards did it win?
It got an audience award, or no, excuse me, the grand jury award, I'm reading the wrong line, for bold originality, and it also got the Spirit of Sundance Sparky Award.
Did any of the top three that you picked out win awards? We've got Doppelganger Paul, We Are Legion, and OK Good.
Actually, no. None of the ones that I picked in my top three won Slam Dance Awards.
Good taste, Cody. The Academy you. Supports your decisions. Let's talk a little bit about yours, Johnny.
All right. But just to kind of verify my decisions, the Slam Dance guy even said themselves, the people who usually win the awards usually do less well later on. So I'm hoping the films I chose do well and get picked up. But I picked one documentary in my top three, which is We Are Legion. It's done by Brian Knappenberger, and it kind of follows the trail of hacktivism and the group Anonymous from their beginnings to where they are today, where they're, you know, taking down the FBI.com websites and things like that. But it's really interesting, and, you know, kind of makes you want to throw on a mask and go run through the streets and fuck some shit up, so.
Allegedly. You have to say allegedly.
Oh yeah, allegedly.
Good.
Yes, definitely.
And one of the dramatic competition movies you picked was Doppelganger Paul. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that one was really, really good. It was written by Chris Elstrand, directed by Dylan Akeo-Smith, and Chris Elstrand. I got a chance to interview them and the two lead actors. It's kind of about, I want to say two friends, but it's really one person stalks the other and they somehow become friends from that. And then there's a stolen manuscript and a trip to Portland to chase down the people who stole it. It's very awkward, but very interesting and funny.
And how about OK Good? What category was that film in? Was that another dramatic?
Yes. That one was directed by Daniel Martinico, and it starred Hugo Armstrong, and they wrote it together. They're really interesting. I got to interview them as well. They've kind of been friends since the fourth grade and, you know, just kind of grown up and somehow both ended up in Hollywood in kind of different areas and worked together here and there. But the film is about Paul Kaplan. He's kind of a failing actor who's kind of working his way through Hollywood, and lots of bad things happen to him, and he kind of slowly spirals out of control throughout the movie. And the ending is very interesting, and I won't give anything away, but it's, if you stay through the entire movie, it's definitely worth it in the end, because it can be awkward and painful to watch in some places.
And you guys both caught shorts. Cody, you said that you really enjoyed On Tenderhooks.
But I didn't enjoy it, but I thought it was a very powerful film.
How powerful?
I actually passed out during the screening of that.
This is not one of your jokes, Cody?
No. It's a film about human suspension. They insert meat hooks into their skin and get raised into the air, and I was watching it just saying, oh God, and next thing I knew, I was waking up during the end credits, and I had passed out cold onto a fellow audience member.
An anonymous, just like random audience member?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that spark anything? Is this a Hollywood story about to happen, or were they kind of upset?
Everyone in the screening and the Slendance people were pretty concerned, but
some people noticed.
I thought it was funny. Yeah, I thought it was funny. Everybody noticed. Everyone in the screening room noticed, but I thought it was hilarious.
Is there a short that you actually enjoyed that didn't make you pass out?
Yeah, February. That one was really good. It was kind of, it was a bunch of sketches of this guy's life, just a span of a day or two. It was just a really good, wasn't much of a story, but it was made really well. Really good cinematography and sound, and it was a real good snapshot of just this character.
So it's like a character sketch, a really good, good study on someone named February, or where's February?
No, it was just, it took place during the month of February, and it was just this guy kind of looking for connection, meeting girls, and...
Oh, a Valentine's Day sort of theme, I see.
Yeah, kind of.
And Johnny, which short did you really enjoy?
The one I enjoyed most was called Hope You Like Crap.
Make sure, we're going to point out there's a period after.
Yeah, it's not Hope You Like Crap, it's Hope You Like Crap. And it was done by Sean Parker, and it's basically a film that he made in film school when he was 20, with him voicing over today, like just mocking the crap out of this really, really shitty film, and saying how when you're that age, pretty much everyone makes shitty films like that. And his original film was called Hope, so that's what, and then the You Like Crap was added in because
it
really is crappy.
You saw it as well, Cody? You concur?
Yeah, it sucked, and he knew it, and he just talked shit on it, and it was hilarious.
Was he there at the screening?
Yeah. Yeah, he was like, I'm sorry for that.
So you guys got to interact, like our Sundance crew always gets to, with people during Q&As, and you get to meet them after the screening sometimes and interview them as well.
Yeah, I talked to the Bindlestiffs kids. They're all these young kids,
awesome.
Made this movie straight out of high school. They were really smart and made a really good film, and they were hilarious.
Yeah, I seem to run into Daniel and Hugo from OK Good pretty much at every happy hour I went to. So we had a lot of beers together, and they're very awesome and friendly. So
I love that about the Treasure Mountain Inn. There's a restaurant there that they turn into a drinking lounge every night. They call it the, what is it called? It's like the director's lounge or something.
Yeah,
and you have free drinks.
The filmmaker's lounge, and then I think it's Carhartt?
The Carhartt lounge.
Yeah.
The cowboy clothes. Carhartt.
Cowboy clothes. I'm not familiar with that. That wasn't there last year. But it's an opportunity.
Usually walk past that to the bar and then walk past it again. So not many people stop in the cowboy clothes section.
Did you guys like that element of the film festival, being able to interact with these people that made the movies and were in the movies?
Yeah, I got to meet a lot of cool people from around the country and around the world. It was cool to be able to talk to the people that made the films that I saw and liked.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everyone I interviewed with, I saw multiple times throughout the festival. And even people that whose movies I just saw, and I was still kind of getting to know them throughout the week just because they're all right there in the same building, so It's pretty great that way.
How does that factor into your overall experience? This was your first time up there, and I think that everyone, the first time they go up to a film festival like this, kind of has some things that they weren't expecting or some things that they were. What surprised you? What was, you know, meeting your expectations about the event?
Well, I just assumed I was going to party a lot the whole time, and I didn't really. I just mostly saw the films and then talked to the people behind them and got a lot of good insight into the films.
I'm still not sure how many films I saw, because I was up there pretty much every day of the festival just watching movies like crazy. So, and I still didn't see everything they had, which is crazy and depressing, but, you know, amazing at the same time.
I'll say the first time I went and covered Slam Dance, I thought I would be in the same boat as you, Cody. I really thought that I was going to get a great experience out of it, but it ended up having an even better time than I thought, and alcohol played a very small part of that. Like Sundance and Slam Dance, you know, it's a party season for the industry people, but if you're actually seeing the movies and you get engaged, you kind of get in this, it's like a movie high. You want to just keep seeing the next and the next and the next. You have that same fever, Cody? Movie fever, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and it was really good to just have the opportunity to see so many good films in a short period of time.
But at the same time, the happy hour is always there to satisfy that.
Yeah, I did, get some free booze out of it.
Yeah, of course. Probably some Dos Equis, yeah?
I got some fancy sake and some weird coffee tequila or something, I don't know, but...
You guys are doing a great job repping Slam Dance sponsors, by the way, today. Some cowboy...
I went with the Pacifico beer, if that helps.
Oh, I love the Carhartt stuff. I got a Carhartt beanie. That was pretty
sweet.
Yeah, we ate a shitload of Luna bars, so...
Luna bars. I was afraid of growing breasts. They said they're for women, and I was like,
they were delicious. Oh, my goodness.
Well, they do have soy, you know? That's not something to be underplayed. Soy can cause gynecomastia. We don't have to talk about that, guys. Let's talk about your final thoughts on the festival and what you'd like to point readers to on our website at slugmag.com that you really enjoyed. Starting with you, Cody.
I'd just say, like, my top three films I chose, I really liked those, and I don't know, I'd check out the reviews of those, and then there are still a bunch. Buffalo Girls, really good documentary. The Sound of Small Things, really good feature film. Can't even remember all the films I saw and reviewed, but there's a bunch up there, so check them out.
You going up next year? Excited?
Oh, hell yeah.
Johnny?
I would say, you know, go to our website, check the links for, you know, most of the films we have links to their websites, so if they do get picked up, you'll probably find out about it there. But there were a lot of amazing films, so definitely look into these. We even got a chance to see Peter Baxter's, he's the director of Slam Dance. He debuted his latest documentary called Wild in the Streets. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's an amazing documentary.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and it's a good festival. Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll see you up there next year in Park City. I'll be slam dancing. Again, I hope maybe catching a film or two. This year I wasn't able to, but thanks for doing that. Regardless, guys, and thanks for your initial year. You guys did a great job.
Thanks. I enjoyed
Thank
it.
Thank you.
That moment.
Never to Nezra are a doom death metal group from, surprisingly enough, the sleepy suburb of Bountiful, Utah. The band was created 10 years ago by lead singer guitarist Michael Ventura as a solo studio project. After years of private work, Ventura started recruiting members Rick McCoy, Dave Dyer, and Kyle and Jake Smith to complete the now assembled lineup. They released an EP, NTNR, in July of 2011. From that EP, here's Separation Anxiety. We'll be right back.
show was on the grind.
That was Separation Anxiety from the EP NTNR from Never to Nezra. The band is going to be opening up Slug Localized this Friday, February 10th. Visigoth and Holdra will join them for the 10 p.m. show at the Urban Lounge, and as usual, it's an affordable $5 bill. For more info on the band, search for Never to Nezra on Facebook. That's N-E-V-E-R-T-A-N-E-Z-R-A. The Riders Project is a ski, surf, and snow online retailer mostly based in Utah. The company sells products from companies from Utah and Colorado at largely discounted prices, and the project takes 100% of the profits they receive and donates it to a charity of your choice. They carry products from Skullcandy, Wellen, Discreet, Globe, Vestal, and more. Slug writer Sean Zimmerman Wall interviewed co-founder Brian Berg in June of 2011.
Let's just start from the beginning of Riders Project, how you got involved.
Basically, my friend Tyler Strauss and I both grew up together in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and we both recently graduated from college and couldn't really find jobs that we were that interested in. Tyler wanted to get something going for charity, and I have an IS degree from the U, so he needed someone to do computer stuff because he wanted to do it all online, so he kind of got in touch with me. We hashed through a few ideas until we kind of came across this idea that we wanted to do kind of action sports, selling stuff to raise money for the charities. He came up with an idea, wanted to do something for charity, and we both grew up in the snow sports stuff, so that was kind of a natural spot for us to start. And there's a lot of cool, like, snowboard, ski, skate, surf charities out there that don't get a lot of funding.
Yeah, cool.
So we thought it was a good spot to jump in, and that's where it was born. It took about 2 years from there until we actually have anything up and running. A lot of planning and a lot of kind of like testing the waters, seeing how much interest there was out in the industry and if it would actually work.
So what steps did you take to kind of your market research or whatever you
call it? We went to SIA in Denver.
Oh, nice.
Well, we've been there the last 2 years now, but the first year we went just basically with the idea, and we just walked around, talked to as many companies as we could, kind of explaining what the idea was and seeing if they would have any interest in helping us out, if they thought it was something that could work. And we got a lot of good response from it, so that was kind of the spot where we officially decided to go ahead with it and had to, you know, pony up some money and get going.
And so that's when you guys decided this would be kind of a viable project for the two of you to undertake. And it was just the two of you that kind of started it?
Yep, Tyler. And then we found through a local company here, Big Cartel, is a software company. They got us in touch with a good programmer who could take care of a lot of the stuff that I couldn't do, and an awesome designer. And those guys, they helped us out getting everything running at the site.
So Big Cartel, local company, you guys have a pretty good relationship still? And did they do it as like kind of a donation, or was that part of your
startup? No, they did. They gave us a way off their normal rates, but it was still, we had to pay for it.
Are you guys a nonprofit?
We're not a nonprofit. We talked to like 30 different lawyers trying to find a way where we could actually be a nonprofit. But because like our main business is selling things, it's not like we'd never get approved for the actual 501 nonprofit status.
Oh.
So really we're just a not for profit.
Okay.
So we do give away 100% of our profits. But like if someone donates money to us or something, it's not a tax deductible.
Okay.
And part of the reason is it gives us a lot more flexibility too. We're allowed to buy stuff from companies if we want to. If you're a nonprofit, you can't buy things to sell. It has to be kind of like your own stuff that you're, like your own merchandise basically.
Okay.
To a certain percentage.
I know it's pretty stringent.
Yeah.
I've talked to some other people.
So it just gave us a lot more flexibility too. We looked at it for like 6 months trying to figure a way, and then we thought about it and we were like, you know, it's going to be a whole lot easier to do it if we're just a regular company. Mm-hmm. that gives away all our profit, because we're not really focused on getting donations to us, per se. We don't really feel like we need to be a 501.
And I was looking on your site, the selection of the different charities and the different sports, surf, snow, skate. How did you guys get involved with those charities? What was that process like?
Really, we just kind of found charities that we, you know, were excited about, that were surf, skate, snow, is where we started, and just kind of handpicked the ones that we liked the most to kind of feature. But then we decided we wanted to open it up also to broader charities across the board, because lots of people, you know, feel really strongly about animal rights or cancer research or whatever it may be. And just because they snowboard doesn't necessarily mean they just want to give their to a snowboard charity.
Sure.
They might want to give to cancer research because they're passionate about that. So we decided we didn't really want to limit it at all, other than we don't really like to do political or religious charities, just because of, avoids a whole lot of trouble that
way. It's kind of sticky ground, yeah.
We decided to go with kind of as many as we could to try to cover a broad base of them, and then tell people that, you know, if you have a charity that you really care about that we don't have listed, shoot us an email. We'll check out the charity, make sure they're legit,
sure,
and fit everything, and then we'll get your donation to them instead. So we try to say it's open to, you know, any charity you want.
Athletes in the past couple of years that have passed away doing their sport, and there have been charities that have been started up in their name, like the Billy Poole Foundation, and I know High Fives gets a lot of its support from like C.R. Johnson and that kind of stuff. So that's good that, you know, you guys are bringing awareness to those smaller charities that otherwise maybe not many people know about.
Yeah, and the great thing about the small charities is they're a lot more hands-on, and they can do a lot more with, you know, the small amounts of money. Because we're not, you know, we're not generating gigantic donations here, and it's not like anything that these bigger, like ASPCA sees or anything, but with a few $100, these small charities can do a lot that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do, because that's charities that they're running off of nickels and dimes.
Do you guys keep a tally of how much has been donated so far?
Mm-hmm.
And then since you guys started, how you guys...
We're not even quite to $1,000 yet since the website launched in January.
Okay. This January?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, it's slow. We're just trying to grow right now and spread awareness about it and get more companies on board. It's been harder than we expected because we're so small and we don't have, you know, we don't have a lot of money to just go out and buy a bunch of inventory at once and warehouse it or anything like that. So we're working mainly right now with a lot of local companies. We're working with Skull Candy, who's based up in Park City. Discreet is here in Salt Lake. Marker, they just moved from Salt Lake up to Park City. Have all been really awesome in helping us get enough product to keep everything fresh. And a lot of them have donated stuff to us, which is great. We're working mainly with closeout items, like a lot of last year's stuff or things on sale, because we don't want to be a competitor with all these snowboard stores, you know. It's hard enough for them as it is, and we don't want to try to jump in there and make everyone mad at us for being another competitor in there. So we're trying to work so that we can make everyone happy, you know, help these companies get rid of their old stuff that they don't want. Then we can give a better deal to the person that's buying it, make it more likely that they can afford it, so that, you know, that money can end up with the charities. We're just kind of trying to make it as painless as possible for everyone.
Yeah, no doubt. And it seems that the added spin of the 100% of the proceeds to charity, and people get to choose their charity, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
And like the website says, it kind of makes you feel like you're doing good, which you are, for the world or whoever.
Yeah. I've grown up snowboarding here. That's why I moved out to Utah. And, you know, you work a serving job or bartending or whatever, you're never going to have a whole lot of extra money lying around, and even if you care about a certain cause, you don't have the extra money to just kind of make a donation or the time to go volunteer or anything when your life is like revolving around a sport.
Right, no, I understand.
So this makes it, you know, you got to buy a new coat anyway, so you can buy a coat, and then you still get to pick and help the cause that you care about.
To read more about the Writers Project, head over to the July 2011 issue online in our archives at slugmag.com. And you can visit their website at thewritersproject.org for gear and more. We're joined once more by Esther Maroño, editorial assistant and regular co-host of our events section here at Soundwaves from the Underground. Thank you for joining
me. Co-host?
Oh yeah, you for sure.
I'm so flattered.
Well, that's just what you are.
That I was just like a guest.
No, you've officially surpassed that. Past 20 episodes and you're co-host for
been
sure.
Been promoted.
Sure. Let's say that's a promotion. You're stuck with me more often. That's a blessing and a curse. We've got a few events this week. It's shaping up to be a really cool February. We're going to start with Craft Lake City. Yes, that's right. It's Craft Lake City info, and it's in February. That may sound weird, but we're going to start a new workshop series. Why don't you tell people about that, Esther?
Yeah, this is actually the second installation of Craft Lake City's workshop series this February 6th on Monday. We're actually teaming up with the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art, which is formerly the Salt Lake Art Center.
Can we call it the MoCA? UMoCA?
UMoCA.
Thank you.
Holly Jones of Say Hello is going to be showing us how to make cardboard chandeliers to make your Valentine's dinner a little more romantic.
I heard about this. I'm glad that we're doing that. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And actually, they're also giving a tour of UMoCA as well before the craft sessions.
So. Now, do people need to bring anything? Is that provided? What's the cost?
It's $5 just for the materials, the material fee. But the first 5 people who show up get to craft for free. So run over there as fast as you can.
That was crafty of them. I'm sorry. Can we? Yeah, let's delete that.
No.
No. I'm terrible with the puns. My uncle's a dentist. Blame him.
Oh.
Fortunately, we've got another really exciting episode of Localized, or edition rather. It's February 10th, featuring Huldra, Visigoth, and Nevratanezra. Are you excited about that, Esther?
I am so excited. We rarely have all metal showcases for Localized, and this is one of the rare treasures.
A rare treasure? Rare fucking treasure. Thank you, Esther. I've never heard metal described as a rare treasure.
What? Come on. Metal is always super epic and adventurous. Like
a
treasure,
pearl of great price.
Treasure. Treasure is a big part of the metal scene.
You're right. There are many songs written about finding treasure. That's my breakdown. Did you like? Wait for it. But it's still doing the breakdown.
All right, in all seriousness, though, if you check out the magazine, you'll see features on both Huldra and Visigoth.
And heaven forbid you not be serious about metal, because it's way fucking serious.
No, but one of these bands actually talks about having songs about Dungeons and Dragons. Or maybe
Perfect.
It was Magic the Gathering. You know.
Either or.
One of those things.
Equally nerd metal fantasticry. It's not like we're writers. We don't need to know words. We don't need to use our words.
And we get to make them up.
Sidebar, I made up the word Andor. You take the slash out of the slash word Andor, and then I made that up. Also, speaking of metal...
That took me a second to get.
That's also the name of a kingdom in Lord of the Rings, I think. So maybe JR gets more credit for that. I call him JR, by the way.
Yeah.
And I just leave the Tolkien out. Me and JR.
JP and JR.
He liked to smoke a pipe. I like to smoke a pipe. Of a different kind. And Saturday, February 11th, happy birthday to Diane Hartford. She's a writer and a Derby correspondent.
Happy birthday, Diane.
We still have one more thing, though. It's not really taking place this week. It's taking place all of February. You want to tell people what's going on?
Yeah. Every month, Slug Magazine and Whole Foods and Trolley Square teams up to bring the community, add a dash of local art. Basically, they showcase a local artist every month on the west wall of the cafe area, and it gives local artists a chance to get more than just their normal exposure and kind of showcase their amazing talents while people munch on yummy Whole Foods.
I went to the salad bar there the other day and checked out this month's edition. It's really cool. I can't wait for February's.
Yeah, so February we have artist Desiree Lee. She's a photographer, but she's going to be showcasing her pen and ink illustrations, which are actually really awesome. They kind of remind me of like a children's book illustrations, and she has a lot of photograph style portraits, but they're all done in ink and in pen, which is amazing. She's a BYU graduate and she also does screen printing and blogs, and her work will be hanging through February 29th, so go check it out.
We also have an app. Have you heard about this? We talked about it last time. Do you remember?
We talked about it quite a bit, actually.
But there's an addition to the app. We're on it now.
Oh, yes, there is an addition to the app. Because when you go and download the Slug Magazine iTunes app, we're actually right there on the front, and you can click on it and you can listen to the episode, or you can even call our voicemail line directly from the app, which we very much suggest for you to do.
We've been getting a lot of really good calls lately. Really? I think it's probably from the app.
Oh, well, it's working.
Yes, it is. It's there.
Aptastically.
That's another great made-up word. Thanks again, Esther. Catch you next time.
Thanks, JP.
Visigoth is a five-piece metal band from Salt Lake City that started during a dorm recording session at the U of U campus between Jake Rogers and Lee Campana. The duo recruited more members into the fold, including Mikey T from the recently disbanded Killbot. The band released their demo EP Vengeance back in November of 2010. Here's Sing for the Fallen from that EP. That was Visigoth's Sing for the Fallen from their demo EP, Vengeance. The band is going to be performing at Slug Localized this Friday, February 10th. They'll be playing with Never to Nezra and Holdra, as we mentioned before, at 10 p.m., and it's just $5. For more information on Visigoth, you can check out the article on the band in our February 2012 issue of Slug, or facebook.com/VisigothOfficial. That's V-I-S-I-G-O-T-H. It's time once again to talk about Yelp. Yelp is a community-based review website, and we have the community manager here with us once again. Thanks for stopping by, Jeffrey Stedman.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to be here.
Today we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects. I'm just going to go ahead and say ever. Chocolate.
You say that with quite the grin on your face. I mean, pie was a big one. We talked about pie a little while back, and it's nice to see that you're emotional about this subject as well.
Equally emotional. Well, chocolate and pie combined together is the best.
Yeah, chocolate pie is good, but today we're going to take the pie out of it and just talk about chocolate. I think it's an appropriate time to talk about it, right?
Yeah, it's Valentine's Day soon.
Valentine's Day is coming up, and whether you do it willingly or whether you get suckered into it, you probably need to know some places around town to get some chocolates. If you don't listen to this till after Valentine's Day, you're just going to want to double your order on all the places that we talk about because you're in trouble. But let's dive into it. A couple places in town to get some chocolates. I think one of the most famous, probably the most famous, I would think, is Hatch Family Chocolates. If you remember, Hatch Family Chocolates is where they filmed Little Chocolatiers on TLC. I know that was one of your favorite shows, JP.
A TLC classic.
Yeah, Little Chocolatier. So, yeah, it's a great. They moved not too long ago, so their new address, 376 East 8th Avenue. They have 4.5 out of 5 star rating on Yelp after, I think, 31 reviews. And I wanted to read a little bit about what Gina B. says about them. She said, "Their customer service is great, and I'm a huge fan of both their chocolate-dipped Rice Krispie treats, which sandwich a layer of caramel and marshmallow. Good grief.
OMG, Jeffrey.
And their pretzel sticks, calm yourself, friend. Their pretzel sticks, which have a layer of caramel, and then are dipped in dark chocolate. I've never seen this done anywhere else, and I love, wait for it, love it. Three loves. So,
three loves.
Yeah, they got a lot of great stuff. If you want, if you're not so much about buying the actual chocolates and you want to come by for some chocolate treats, they make a killer hot chocolate. They don't use any kind of powder in it. They make a frozen hot chocolate. So all things chocolate and the Little Chocolatiers. And they, you know, the episode I did watch. I'm a studious man. I research all the things that we talk about on here. So I did watch an episode of Little Chocolatiers on TLC. They made a giant chess set out of chocolate that fit on a stage. So from big to small, whatever you want.
And next on the list, it looks like you have Amano, which is one of the best chocolate companies in the world, some might say.
Arguably the best. A lot of people would say the best chocolate company in the United States. A lot of people would argue, yeah, the best chocolate in the world. They focus on single origin dark chocolate, right? So they're based out of Orem. You can go down to the factory store. If you go down there, they have their single origin chocolates. They also sell truffles from their in-house. They have a pastry chef who works down there. Amano makes really, really high-end dark chocolate. You can find it, I think locally I've seen it at Harmon's. It's around in some other places. But they go, and you can read the story on the chocolate bar about where in the world it came from when they went down there looking for the cocoa beans.
And it's pretty highly reviewed by Yelpers.
Yeah, they're 5 out of 5 stars. Only 7 reviews, but I mean, you know, you're right. I think most people would regard it as some of the best in the world. Rob W. would agree. He says, "Amano makes very high-end and single-origin chocolates. It's very, very good indeed. It is a little bit pricey," he mentions, "but," he says, "it's worth it to experience the differences and complexity in flavor that the beans exhibit."
Oh, Rob W., getting after it.
Yeah.
I should also point out, I believe you can get this at No Brow Coffee, and coffee and chocolate combined together. You could even maybe dip your chocolate in the coffee or let it melt. That would be amazing. I haven't tried it yet. But there's another outlet. I don't know of any other coffee shops that do that in town, but No Brow's your spot if you liked your chocolate combined with some coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Moving on, Cummings Studio Chocolates is kind of this old school vanguard of chocolates in Salt Lake.
It's off of 700 East. 9th South.
Yeah. 9th South. 679 East, 9th South. 5 out of 5. Only 3 reviews, so not a lot of content, but definitely a lot of people vouching for it at 5 out of 5. Lee A. would be one of those saying, "My favorites are the salt caramel in dark chocolate, Bacardi rum in milk chocolate, dipped grapes, and the marshmallow caramel in milk or dark. Oh, and how could I forget, the best thing they make is dark chocolate dipped orange peel." So if you're looking for something maybe a little more non-traditional, or they definitely have the traditional stuff, but there's some fun things you can come by and try, and they're doing some fun mixing of some flavors over there.
I went last minute, like a good boyfriend, a few years ago for Valentine's Day to pick some up for my significant other at the time, and there's a really long line on Valentine's Day, so I guess for anybody in any of these chocolate shops, this stuff's going to sell out early, so you want to take advantage of getting there early. Earlier than day of, because I forgot it was Valentine's Day. So.
Yeah. Your selection's gonna be better. I mean, these guys do a great job, and they anticipate it's coming. But you know, I mean, when you're an idiot boyfriend who shows up, I wouldn't call you an idiot boyfriend.
No, that's an accurate term.
I think it's fair.
It's a fair term.
If you show up late, I mean, you know, you get what you get.
Their chocolate covered fruit is some of the best around, though. The strawberries are really great. I'm more traditional. I don't know about this orange peel business, but their chocolate dipped strawberries are amazing. But those you definitely have to order in advance because they sell out.
Yeah, I would say of the chocolates, the chocolate dipped strawberry, the sexiest of the chocolates.
Oh, by far.
Yeah,
the one that's guaranteed, and I know you wouldn't say this, get you tail.
Right.
The term is tail, Jeffrey. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
If you're after some tail, if you want to get some more tail, and you're in, you want some Utah County tail.
Do any of these reviews say tail? In them?
As for as good of a researcher as I am, I did not. I'll get back to you about the tail, about the best place. Maybe we'll do a whole issue about the best place to get tail.
I think we should do some segments of where to get some tail, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's actually a category you can find on Yelp, but you know what? That's the great thing about Yelp is you can write, you know, if that's a legitimate attribute of the business, you just put it in there. And what fellow Yelper would not like to read about the best places to get tail?
The Yelpers definitely have a lot of personality, so
absolutely.
I'm sure we'll start seeing a rush of
tail reviews.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So there's just a few others I want to mention. Kara Chocolates, 4 out of 5, 3 reviews. They're located in University Mall all year long. They make some mint chocolate truffles. You know, you can check it out down there. Chocolat, one of the things that we wanted to mention. Chocolat is another local company. I think they're based in Ogden, and they only open up a retail spot a couple times a year, once during Christmas season in Trolley Square, and then they're going to open up for just a few days around Valentine's Day. So I think that weekend before Valentine's Day, you can go over to Trolley Square, kind of in between Cabin Fever and Tabula Rasa, and they have a little space there, and there's some very, very pretty chocolates and some tasty stuff, so you check that out as well.
Good heads up. I would probably check that out this year.
It's convenient right down here, and if you're in Trolley for something else, it's nice to stop by. And then, you know, there's some great places that don't have a retail location, but keep your eyes open for Utah truffles. I run into the chocolate conspiracy guy like at every festival and fair that I'm at, so if you're out at something and see him, it's legit.
They sell that at Earth Goods General Store.
Across from Landis.
On 9th East and 13th South, I believe. They have their drinking chocolate, their sipping chocolate, uh-huh. And their chocolate bars there, because they're a company that's interested in sustainability, which goes along with the Earth Goods General Store mantra.
Yeah.
That's a place to get that.
There's one more place I want to talk about, and I just couldn't not in this episode. You know, I don't think you buy chocolates proper there, but it's a place that's called The Chocolate. So it's out in West Jordan, 90th South, Redwood Road, and it's this darling old house that they've gone into, and it's completely precious, right? So, I mean, know that before you go. If that's not your vibe, it's probably not going to be your thing, but they have massive dark chocolate cakes and cupcakes and cookies and a thing called the Kazuki, which is like a half-baked cookie with ice cream on it.
Wait. Did you just say half-baked?
Yeah. So they put it in, they bake it, so it's still doughy, but it's got a little bit of a crust on it. Throw some ice cream on there. It's really, really good. And there are tons of... The first time I had a piece of cake there, I didn't think I was going to make it. And I mean, it's chocolate ganache with chocolate cake.
Whoa.
And I thought they were going to peel me off the ceiling. I was just like shaking from all the chocolates.
But no pie, unfortunately. Not when you went last.
I've talked to them about it.
I know you're a pie guy.
I've made
like
the
me.
Suggestion.
Let's get them in on that, maybe.
But it's you know, if you're looking for a great little romantic place to take somebody on Valentine's Day and get some chocolate kind of stuff.
There's another Salt Lake City mainstay, V Chocolates. And
yeah.
Yelpers yelping about that. It's kind of a factory outlet store, so I don't know if anybody has talked about
it. It is, yeah. They have some locations. You can get them at the Taipans in Salt Lake. You can get them at the store. They do have a Sugar House location, and their main location is 850 South Main Street. They also have, I think, a kiosk at the Fashion Place Mall, and they're available at maybe 20 or so places throughout the West, and I think Vermont or something. So,
yeah, and they do very well mail order around this time of year. They're huge producers.
Yeah, get on the website. Most of these places, you know, you get on the website and you can order chocolates if you don't want to go in there and deal with the crowds, or if you're thinking ahead, JP, you can do that.
Should I do that this year?
I mean, you have a computer in front of you right now.
Oh my golly.
It might be a good idea so you're not the idiot guy running around at, you know, 7 o'clock at night trying to find chocolate.
I'm going to put it in my calendar, maybe a few days before.
All right.
So it'll beep at me. Now the smartphone thinks for me, thankfully, because I am the idiot boyfriend. That's an accurate description.
The shoe fits, my brother.
Well, thanks a lot, Jeffrey. Where can people find out more about your newsletter, for instance, and the site in general?
Yeah, come find me at yelp.com. It should default you to Salt Lake City. If it doesn't, just choose Salt Lake City as your location. I'm all over there. Send me a friend request and start, you know, log on. And if there's places where you can find some great chocolate or have great Valentine's Day ideas, you know, get on and write some reviews of some great local businesses and help out all the idiot boyfriends out there so they can find a great place this Valentine's Day or any time they need to get out of the doghouse.
All right. Thanks again, Jeffrey. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit us at slugmag.com. If you have any questions, comments, or anything else you'd like to let us know about the show, send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com. Or you can call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. It's available all the time, so if you're drunk, it's 2 in the morning on Sunday, a little coked up, give us a call. Let us know your thoughts about evolution. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton, with our executive producer, Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design was by T. Doan, with technical design by Kate O'Connor. Make sure you join us next week when we speak with Salt Lake City legends Form of Rocket. We'll also be listening in as Princess Kennedy is going to be interviewing the Mormon housewife, Sister Dottie S. Dixon. And we'll also be finding out about SaltCon, which is a board game expo. And we'll be joined again by us there. We'll talk about events. And we're going to hear some new music. So we'll catch you next week.